on this Monday morning. Great. So here's a magic formula, right? Motivation equals needs times beliefs. That was laid on my heart by Al last week in a meeting I had at corporate, and I said, wow, I really like that. I'm going to run with that because I think some of us need a little motivation once in a while, right? Yeah, I'd say so. And, you know, you can look at up definitionally what is motivation, you know, and it's you know, motivation is basically, you know, the providing somebody a reason to act or a certain way, or, you know, how do we get motivated? How do we get moving? How do we get something in directional so that we, you know, get our drive going? We have an incentive or inducement to do something. It arouses us, sustains us, or regulates our behavior. Motivation, critical. And motivation's critical, otherwise we don't take action, right? We need to be motivated in order to take action. So critical that we have motivation. And you can look at motivation as two different kinds of motivation. We have intrinsic motivation, and that's something that's intrinsic. It's inside of us. We're motivated, like if we want to learn something, because we're just interested in it. That's internal, intrinsic motivation. We may want to accomplish a goal or task because it's something we feel competent at and we enjoy doing, right? Like one of those things might be achieving greater health. That's intrinsic. We have something inside of us. We're motivated to have greater health because that's intrinsic in us that we create a greater health. So that can be there. Then we can also have extrinsic motivation. On the other hand, extrinsic motivation comes from outside the person, you know, and I put a bunch of ideas down there. You know, getting paid is an extrinsic because we're depending on somebody else paying us something. So we're motivated to get paid. We want that income, and it's going to produce something for us. And that's a big reason. You know, I love Manatech for lots of reasons. Probably if you look at my number one reason today, it's probably, I don't know. I you know, it's really hard for me because I have two that overlap each other. I have the reason that I love to impact people's lives. Through my work I did with Patrick Dean and other self-development courses, I learned that contribution was my number one priority in my life. It was my number one core value. So Manatech allows me to be in that mode of contribution. And why do you want to live in your number one core value all your life? Because it produces the greatest joy in your life. You'll find yourself so internally motivated, you won't need any external motivation because it just drives you. And that's what contribution is to me. It's about driving force in me to make a contribution in people's lives. And so what a blast it is to be in Manatech, to contribute health and contribute purpose. And you know, the other thing is just contribute to people, to bring a family atmosphere, a togetherness, a group, a team. You know, we have team calls now. We have like 40, 50 people on our team calls, and those are so awesome. So, you know, those are great things. So you have extrinsic motivations, but we want to satisfy our inside needs too. What is your greatest core value? And satisfying that is what will, your motivation will be endless. So critical. Some people, motivation for Manatech is they want money. I also want money. I don't have a love of money. I have a love of what money creates, right? When I can build 6 churches in Brazil in a year from my Manatech monies and other sources, I mean, that's really huge for me. So what is it about you, and what would money do for you? If you had an extra $10,000 a month, what would you do with it? How would your life be different? And some of you shy away from, well, Mary Jo, but that's not going to motivate me. I said, why not? It's not the money that motivates you. It's what you are able to do with it that should motivate you to create it. Because as I teach my grandchildren and kids at church and all around me, I go, you know, money grows on trees. You just have to figure out how to pick it. So develop a good relationship with money. Don't be in fear of it. Don't be scarcity mindset over it. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And if you don't think it's everywhere, just read a newspaper. Just look at the news. Look at some of these people making millions and trillions of dollars. It's everywhere. So why don't you have it? Don't go into, well, I'm not good enough. It's not about any of that. It's about what's your relationship with money. It's one of the huge things that holds people back. If they have a bad relationship with money, you're not going to create any. And then you use it to justify, oh, I love it when Christians tell me, oh, but money's bad and all this stuff. I go, no, it's the love of money that's bad. I don't love money. I love what it can do, what you can create with it. I don't need a bigger house. I don't need another car. I don't need anything. I don't need any clothes. I don't need anything. But I need to be building churches. I need to be impacting lives. And money allows me tremendous flexibility in how I do that. So that's what drives you, right? So extrinsic motivation, we have that. Ending global malnutrition is an extrinsic motivation. It's outside of us. It's something that we see all around it. So it motivates us. When we see that a child dies every 6 seconds under the age of 5 in this world from malnutrition, is that a motivator? I don't know. For some people, it's not. It's real to me. Of course, I visited the townships when I was in South Africa, and, you know, I could see the differences this product was making in these kids' lives. I could hug on them and play with them in the streets, and, you know, we played all sorts of games. We had a blast going up and down the streets. I was in total, utter joy the whole time I was there. In fact, somebody came up to me, one of the people on the trip, and they said, Mary Jo, that you just seem like you're in your milieu here. And I go, well, you know, I spend every summer in Brazil for a couple of weeks walking dirt streets and going into people's grass huts and sharing the gospel. Clearly, it's a familiar place for me, and it's, you know, what I feel God's driven me to do. And that's what brings great joy in your life, right? So it's a blessing to be around these kids. They're so beautiful. They're so young. They're 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years old. They have the whole world in front of them. And what a joy to bring joy in their life for a period of time that I can. So motivation. So we all look at what is it that motivates us. And the formula suggests that needs and beliefs, right? The amount of motivation we have in our life is based on needs, right? Needs and times beliefs. So let's look at that formula. Let's first talk about needs because some of us look at it and say, well, what do you mean by needs? I can sustain my life exactly the way it is for the rest of my life. I've checked out my retirement funds and they're going okay, so I can distribute so much a month in that and that'll last me so many years. And I pray that no great health disaster occurs that I can't cover because medical costs are skyrocketing and it seems every time I look, they charge me more, they cut back more of what I'm covered on and what I'm not covered. So, you know, there's that inherent fear, especially as seniors, those of us over the age of 55, that's a concern, right? So we don't know if we even I don't know how you calculate if you have enough. But what are we doing calculating if you have enough? Because why don't we just keep creating? Then you don't have to worry about having enough. But we have all sorts of things in our life that are needs. And Maslow, Abraham Maslow has created, he was a humanistic psychologist who believed people were motivated by survival and other needs. And, of course, survival is our number one instinct in our life, isn't it? And we see that by a lot of things happening in our world today. We see a lot of it by what's going on in the United States today because there are a lot of people that are living at a survival level, not a level that most of us on this call would ever accept in our life, but there are a lot of people living on a survival level, okay? And you know, a lot of these, he identified the, you know, physiological security, needs of belonging, esteem, and self-actualization. And he said, you know, we start off with, again, hierarchy of needs. And I gave you a picture of his pyramid, you know, and at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's a famous thing all of you, I'm sure, are familiar with. You've come across it in your life many, many times. But he talks about our foundational needs, and his philosophy around this is that if we our core needs have to be met before we get to higher level needs. And he suggests that breathing, food, water, sleep, sex is one of our needs, these kind of things. These are things that are our basic human needs, survival type needs, physiological needs. If we don't meet our physiological needs, we don't ever climb up the pyramid of needs. So he says people tend to, you know, start at the base level, and we have an innate desire. We have an innate desire in our life to read what he defines as self-actualization, which is the idea that we get to the point where we're choosing our lifestyle, we're getting to live the life that we felt called to live. we're getting to go out there, you know, and many of the things, I'm still not doing everything I want to do, but, you know, building churches in Brazil and putting my foundation together 8 years ago and doing trainings and teachings in that and contributing to people's lives every chance I get, whether it's somebody at church who has, you know, some bad luck falls in, doing pro bono legal work, all the things, you know, those are kind of what you would call more like the self-actualization type activities that you really are finally living at choice. I choose what I do every day of my life. I get to enjoy every moment, and I get to fulfill the desires in my heart in terms of what I feel led to do. You know, it's kind of like self-expression of the highest guiding forces in your life and what they're telling you to do. And I still have many more that I want to do. But that's a self-actual. He says everybody's driven, you know, to get to that self-actualization, but he suggests that, you know, people don't get there unless they fulfill their other basic needs before they get there. And so it's like your first needs are just, you know, staying alive. It's about physiological needs to stay alive. And there are a lot of people that live that directional. They don't make enough money to even buy food for the table or just barely enough to feed their family. That's why we see some people taking their lives today in our society here in the U.S., because they feel like they've so, you know, demeaned their family that they can't care for their family. So better they're dead than that they've failed. They can't face the reality of what they feel like they've, you know, lacked, and they've not become a good, you know, a good father, a good mother, a good caregiver, a good whatever it is, and they give up. Safety becomes our second need, that we want to be safe, right? We want to have security of our body, our resources, our family, our health, our property. So that becomes a second tier. Love and belonging, then we can start really working on friendships, family, intimacy, feeling like we're a part of something. We're creating a union. We're creating camaraderie. We are connectiveness, all that. Then we build self-esteem from that, confidence, achievement, respect of others, respect by others. And then finally, the self-actualization. Well, I'm going to suggest, as though that's Maslow's, that's his philosophy, that we start at the bottom and we work towards the top. And I believe that's true, but I believe that people work on all levels. I believe that people don't work only on one level. I think people are consistently working at different levels at the same time. Our strong force can be pulled in one level, but I believe that we have all these levels because we have that core in our heart of our desire to our voice to be heard. So even if we haven't achieved some of the middle levels, we're always working towards self-actualization, our voice to be heard. What is our calling in our life? And it doesn't have to be one thing. It might be many. But it's about what gives us the greatest satisfaction in our life in terms of creating a difference in the world, what that is. But these are our needs, right? These are the needs that we have in our life, and we have many others. So our needs, and we have to look at those needs and say, express them and be a realist to ourselves, because what happens with a lot of people, why they don't have motivation, is they don't want to recognize their needs. They don't want to recognize where they are in the hierarchy of needs. They don't want to deal with their reality. It's kind of like, remember when I reviewed the book, Life as Art? Life is Art, and that book was so awesome because it talked about one of the main reasons why people don't achieve their goals in their life is because they never grapple with their reality. Because it's like taking a rubber band and stretching it between two fingers. Really, take a rubber band and stretch it between two fingers until it's really taut. Something has to happen. That's called structural tension. Look at one of the fingers is where you are today and the other one is where you want to go. And you're either going to collapse where you want to go or you're going to release where you are today and move up to where you're going to go, because there's structural tension. And what stops us from creating structural tension is the fact that we're not real. We lie to ourselves about where we are today. So you got to be careful with that. And it's not about getting a club out and beating up on yourself. We love to do that. It's human nature, I think. We love to say, oh, woe is me, but it's never about that. It's about, I can't do anything about the past. Can we? Can I do anything about what happened yesterday? No. What happened yesterday is gone. But what can I do about the next hour of my life? What can I do about Monday? I still have, it's only 10:40 here in Dallas. I still have almost a whole day ahead of me, and I can create a tremendous amount in one day. And then I go to bed at night, and I can wake up the next morning, I can start again, and I can be in creative mode one more time. And that's what it's about. But if we don't understand where we are today, we don't get the structural tension of where we're going to allow us to catapult us to that future. So important for us to look at where we are, what are those needs we have? What are the needs? What is your self-actualization? That's your dream. Some people talk about it. The next paragraph I put in the outline, I went back to the why. You know, if you haven't read Start With Why with Simon Sinek, then read that book. Take the time to read that book. It's a great one. We're not on this earth to breathe, eat, and sleep. You have a mind. You've been given a gift. You have a heart that beats. And you're led by an inner purpose. So allow that purpose to be heard. And then allow it to play out in its full way. Again, every voice needs to be heard. What is your voice that needs to be heard? So fulfilling our why is our greatest source of drive. I think that has a lot of truth to it. The why is, what is your why? Your why really is your self-actualization, is it not? Doesn't it correspond to that? Why am I here? What am I driven by? What turns me on so much I'm willing to sacrifice to get there, no matter what? Because, you know, the reality of doing network marketing, this business, is that we're going to bang up against walls, aren't we? We're going to have the naysayers out there. We're going to have people that try to shut us down. We're going to have family. We're going to have friends, and people talk about this a lot. And I say no greater is it happened than taking somebody. I believe coming from lawyering and all the sophisticated background I had and all the, you know, the success I had and all the incredible education I had, and tossing that aside to do network marketing, what do you think I came up against from people? How does a lawyer become a network marketer? That's what people would say. I said, because it's a more honorable profession? Do you like that response? Yeah. I don't know. Think about it. I found more honorable people in network marketing than I ever did practicing law. It's a huge statement. But the idea is that know your why and don't let anyone convince you outside of it. Drive it, right? All right? And it's really part of that, again, self-actualization. What is your voice to be heard? And then it's the needs, and then it multiplies that time beliefs, because how many of us have needs? Every one of us. Every one of us. Will our needs ever end? No, we're always going to have needs. I have needs. I'm always going to have my basic needs. I need to eat, sleep. I need to, right? Right? Exactly. I need to be loved. I have that as a need. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of have that need. I love being loved. I need to have friendships. I need to have family. I need to have intimacy. I want a feeling of confidence and achievement and respect from others. I want all of that. And I have a need of making a difference in the world. And will that need, does it lighten up? If you build 6 churches in Brazil, does it mean that you don't have a need now to build 10 the next year? Right. You get it? Because the world is desperately crying out with so many things they need, and you have the power to fulfill those needs. So it's never going to end. It's not that it stops. You can choose to stop providing, but the need doesn't go away if you look at the world. We have 6 million children now dying under the age of 5. When we formulated M5M, there are only 5 million dying under the age of 5 every year. Now it's over 6 million. That's the most recent statistic. It didn't take but 4 years to add another million dying every year. So are we making headway in this battle? Are we winning this war? No. Do we need to be more diligent as warriors? Yes. And how do we do that? By getting up every morning, climbing out of bed, looking at that wall and going, you know what? I'm going to go out and help 10 more kids this business period. Whatever that is for you. But it's a drive. It's a need, and it's not going away. It just continues to grow. So we need to be more diligent at solving that problem, right? If that's something in your heart. But we need to have beliefs, okay? Beliefs are critically important. Why? Because if we lose our belief, and so many of us are stuck here, I think we all get needs. I think we all understand needs. We may need a better understanding of how not to wallow in them and give up. We need to have more motivation, right? We need to be driven to not allow our needs to overwhelm us, but to, you know, be more coming from solution, making lemonade out of lemons every day instead of wallowing in lemons, right? But the beliefs are what drive, you know, what are the beliefs? What are your beliefs? Because if your beliefs are lacking, it doesn't matter how big your needs are because you won't be motivated. Needs alone don't motivate. There's got to be a level of belief in you. So some of our core basic beliefs are things like, you know, and this is in my discussion with Al, he said that these are the five that always came up when he worked with in the Amway business, and then I added the belief scale at the end because I thought that might be powerful for some of you if you haven't had this tool, to use this tool in your organization and coaching people who might not look like they're stuck, and you go, Mary Jo, I don't know how to help somebody who's stuck. Well, use tools if people are stuck. If you're stuck, use a tool. Because if you're stuck and you stay stuck, you're dead in the water. So you don't want to stay stuck. So find tools out there. There's some great books out there, too, that help you open your eyes to why you're stuck and how to get unstuck, right? And your job as a leader is to do what? Is to help other people open their eyes and get unstuck. So here's the belief scale is a great tool, but here's some of the other beliefs. God and country, of course, that's your core. You know, those are kind of our core values, our core beliefs. What are our core beliefs? What is your spiritual belief? You know, and you may not be a Christian, and that's your choice. Everybody has choices around what their spiritual beliefs are. I listen to all kinds. I was out evangelizing yesterday afternoon, and trust me, there are a lot of people that have just really, you know, different spiritual beliefs, and that's their choice. It's a choice we make about what our spiritual beliefs is. But it's a core concept of who we are. It makes up our beingness. And then what's our belief about our country, right? You know? And that's whether you're positive or negative. That's up to you. It's a choice whether you take it on. I still think, and I don't know how any of you cannot believe that we're in the strongest, the richest, the religious freedoms here. We have phenomenal, great things going on in our country. No matter what, our news and our politics are so trashy today that you'd think that this country was going under tomorrow. But the idea is it's not. And the people, I met with a family yesterday when I was evangelizing, and they were from Colombia. And they were so, they lived here for like 10 years. And they just said, and they're finally going back to Colombia. They hadn't been home for 5 years. They're doing that this summer. And they just talked about the incredible beauty of this country. And where do they live? In a kind of a, you know, a tough apartment complex or apartment area. And I mean, it wasn't like they were wealthy, but the idea of a sense of security for their children was overwhelming. And if you don't get exposed to this, people, you never value what we have here. They're so thankful to be citizens of the United States of America, right? So there's God in the country, and then number two is the industry part of it. You know, and when we talk about the industry, when we talk about network marketing as an industry, right? Or we talk about it may not be network marketing because there really is a difference here. You are part of the wellness industry. That's one. So you got to look at that. You know, what are your beliefs about the wellness industry? And I don't know how you can't be overwhelmed by what's going on in the wellness industry, because all you got to do is look every day at what the news is saying about the trash people are putting in their bodies and how we're the sickest nation in the world and we're ranked 73rd in the world and, you know, we're the sickest of all developed nations. We have the second high, we have the highest healthcare costs, double what the healthcare costs are from the second highest country. yet we're the least healthy of all developed nations. So what is causing all of that? Look at what you put in your mouth every day. Go to a grocery store. Examine what's on the grocery store shelves. Look at the sugar content. There was an article somebody just shared with me about Lucky Charms. Oh, my gosh. It was like 19% or something of the product is sugar. It's almost 20% of the content of a Lucky Charm is sugar. And they're added sugars. They're not natural sugars. And you know how many Lucky Charms they sell? Lucky Charms is a $250 million business in the United States. Just Lucky Charms. Does that make sense? I mean, I was blown away by the numbers. This was crazy stuff. And I'll be happy to share that with you guys. But, I mean, this is just, you don't need much to be all in on the wellness industry, right? So I bet everybody on this call can say, Mary Jo, I'm all in. But that doesn't mean what discourages you, you go out and you try to share that with people and other people ignore it. That doesn't mean that you're not all in. This is about your belief system. Don't let other people change your belief system because you are right about the wellness industry. And then you got to look at our other, we're also in the direct selling industry. So what do we know about the direct selling industry? Are you all in? That's why you go to, if you're not all in on direct selling, if you allow people to dissuade you and persuade you otherwise, that's why you need to go to the professional network marketing convention that's coming up in Dallas. You need to show up. Be a part of it. I mean, if I can go there, and I'm not easily swayed by any Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes along, and I'm very analytical when it comes to presenters, and I can be overwhelmed by the presenters because they're not the guys we saw 30 years ago in network marketing. These people are building, Sarah Robbins, listening to her, she's building orphanages all over India. She's helping thousands of children who are living on the streets to have a lifestyle, to be able to survive, to have a chance in this world. I mean, what does that say about our industry? It says we have people driven by self-actualization that are taking the millions they're making and truly making a millions differences for millions out there all over the world. So, you know, I love direct selling. I love direct selling. And I put together for you guys a sheet that I made about a week ago, and it just says, why direct selling, why Manatech? And some of my people are using this when they're out there sharing now. They carry it around with them because they want the highlights. They want to be able to share these points. They're not going to let somebody impair their beliefs because they have this whole sheet of points, why, and they're 100 more. And we can, if you want to share with me and help rebuild the sheet or build it to be stronger, send me some of your whys, and I'll incorporate them in. Because I think it's a great piece. I think it's something that we can give to new people as well as people that have been in Manatech a while that have somehow lost their luster around direct sales. I only build mine every day. I build mine every day. I believe it's one of the greatest industries we have. I think, and one of my reasons for it is because in my heart of hearts, I love equal employment opportunity. I want everybody who's an eighth grade education or a law degree to be able to be in this business. It doesn't have any barriers to entry. I mean, anyone can come up with $50 and they can be an associate in Manatech, right? Is that the number we have today, Lid? $48? $49. For $49, I can be an associate in Manatech. Who can't come up with $49 today, right? That's all it takes, and you've got a business. $49, and you're in business, right? So anyway, so equal opportunity employer. And then you got the intellectual versus the emotional side. Both have to be satisfied, right? We have the intellectual side knowing what direct sales, we have the numbers, we have all this kind of stuff. But what about your emotional side? Are you really convicted? Where is your belief on that? And if your belief is low on it, on a belief scale, then I'm going to suggest you start doing some reading. You start investing in Eric Worre stuff. You start doing some reading about what some of these people are doing. You come to, again, come to these events. Watch what happens to your emotional side. That'll drive you. That'll drive you. intellectually you see it, but emotionally you can't get committed because people beat down on you out there who are ignorant. And I'm not criticizing the people as much. I'm saying they're just not in the, ignorance means they're not in the know. They don't have knowledge, and they're making decisions and judgment calls based on lack of knowledge. So when people ever say anything to me about network marketing or direct sales, you know, I look at them and I say, wow, what makes you feel that way? I want them. I'm going to challenge them to support their conclusion about my industry. And then I'm going to share with them the highlights that I have about my industry that they have no knowledge of. Like they don't know $178 billion of merchandise is sold through direct sales. They don't know 96 million people are involved in direct sales worldwide. This is not a baby industry. This is a well-tuned machine that's working brilliantly for millions of people, changing lives. They don't know that one out of two people in the United States of America buy from direct sales company every year, 50%. So why is this not a valid industry, right? Look at all those numbers. Okay, industry, company, Manitech, you look at the company. There are a lot of factors about the company, the products, the integrity, the management, the comp plan, the mission. Where are you on the beliefs and all these things? You know, we can go through each one of these. I don't need to highlight them because we know we have phenomenal products. I mean, you look at the number of patents, you look at, you know, the recognition, the science behind it, the $50 million plus that we spend on science, all those things. It's phenomenal. No one matches us. No one's even close. What was it that, is it Shackley that's number two or USANA? Whatever the one, and they have 45 patents and we have 100. And then third place is 4 in the industry. It's crazy. You have something so unique in PhytoMatrix. You have something so unique, of course, in our number one patented technology, Ambritose. I mean, the uniqueness of what you have is so incredible. We are the science company, right? And then you look at the management. I love our management. I think we got a cool team. I love Bob Adam. I love Al. I mean, you know, Joel. I mean, I'm telling you, he is running that marketing department like a company should. I mean, he's got sheets. Every project has a sheet, and it's got the 12 factors of how to complete the project, what has to be in there, what they are. I mean, it's really phenomenal because I'm participating with him on some of those projects, and I'm telling you, it's phenomenal. I've never seen the likes of it in all the history of Manitech because it's really a business. I mean, I came from a business, so I understand how you have checklists and you have certain criteria to every project you work on, and it has to meet those criteria, otherwise you don't do the project. Manitech never. They was kind of seat of the pants. Today it's being run more and more like a real business, so I'm proud of that team. Compensation plan, yeah, it does it need a little bit of work? Yeah, and they're doing that, but, you know, it's got a great payout for people. My brand new national almost made $1,000. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I like to see that happen. My bigger wish is that I was breaking nationals every single month, and that's going to happen soon. That's going to happen soon. Because that's the level when people really get it. And we need more national directors. We need to drive more people to national director level. And so we have compensation plan. We have the mission, whether you're convicted or not about that. But that's about the company. We need to look at where's your belief system around the company. And I know people go from company to company. I mean, there were some people that were in Manitech with me for years, and they said, well, if I got paid nothing, I would still do Manitech. Well, guess what? The minute Manitech had some hardship, they left. And I go, wow, that says a big statement. Loyalty is really a critical part of who you are as a person. But some of these people have been four other. I see them on the Internet. Lydia just I won't mention names, but I'm telling you. They went after Max. They went after, you know, Visalis. They went out. Now they're in Nerium. Now soon they're going to go in. I mean, it's like I look at them. I go, wow, really? Really? Honestly? The companies aren't the problem. What's the problem is the mirror, the reflection in the mirror. It's called commitment and belief, right? Team, how's your team upline? How far do you go as far as you need to? Support team, who did you create around yourself, right? And this is where the law of attraction gets into. This is why we invest in ourselves. This is why we do things like I suggested. with Patrick Dean and others that are going to help you develop you and be a better person? How can I be a better person? How can I be more balanced? How can I let go of some of my stuff that's holding me back? And does it matter what age you are? Oh, my goodness, not. It doesn't matter. We can all change. We can all choose to change. If I'm 20, 40, 60, we can choose. I still choose every day to work on me because I'm ever evolving. I see myself needing changes. When something comes out of my mouth, I go, where did that come from? I go, wow, where's that? Where's it headquartered? Where's the thinking? Why did I say that? I mean, every day. Not every day necessarily, but I mean, it happens. And I just go, wow, where do I need? I need to shift that doesn't happen. Start doing some self-analysis. Look at where that needs to, and don't give up on you ever. My goodness gracious. The world's not giving up on you, so don't you give up on you. And that becomes you. Having the capacity to do this business, build your skills. Of course, we have the Eric Worre stuff. Be resilient. Nothing will stop you except you, right? We know that. As a leader, Orrin Woodward's book, Build Your Leadership Skills. There are tons of them. John Maxwell has phenomenal leadership books, so go after those as well. But we love the Orrin Woodward book for what we're doing today in the 3-point plan, but it's got a great foundation to it. But, you know, Maxwell's got tremendous leadership books out there to read as well. And do I deserve this? Self-worth is a true foundation. That's, again, believing in yourself. Are you worth it? Wow. Now, my core worth comes from one basic concept, and that is God created me in his image. That's all I need to know. Now, everybody else can choose what sets them in a position, right? But that's all I need to know to understand self-worth, because there's nothing greater than God in my life. And if he created me in his image, my goodness gracious, I have unsurpassed capacity to do whatever. So all I want to do is fulfill that as much as I can as I walk on this earth. So that's me. But what's shattering your self-worth? And it can't be things that you did in the past, because there's nothing you can do about it. Forgiveness is ever-present, and you move on and you go forward. But you can choose to live in the past. But notice the word is choice. I suggest you choose to live today and live for the future, because the future is yours to create. So I've attached as well the belief scale, so you can use that. So a lot of great stuff for you to use in your business. Use with yourself first and foremost, and then perhaps you can help some people in your organization as a leader in your organization to help them move forward as well. But to be motivated, what do we need? We need to recognize, what are our needs? What's my why? Why am I doing this? If I don't have a why, I'll never be motivated to do anything, because I can just live every day and breathe and eat and sleep and meet my basic core needs, and that's it. Or I can create a phenomenal future, one I've always dreamt of. It's still there to be created, no matter where you are in your life. But it's a choice. We need to be motivated to do it, so recognize the needs, grab onto them, and multiply them times your belief, and watch what you create. Okay, everybody, love you all. Any last-minute comments, questions? Okay, thanks for the call today, and we'll talk to you guys next Monday. Have a great week.